Welcome to the Liberty Free to Be podcast. I've had the pleasure of connecting with women from all over the world, and I'm constantly left feeling uplifted by their stories, their attitude and zest for life. Whenever I'm having a wobble, they've been a great source of encouragement. So I wanted to create a space to not only share their stories and amplify women over 40's voices, but also share my own passion for living a fulfilled life with freedom. Join me as I share a fortnightly dose of midlife motivation, where you get to hear from some amazing people who are leaving a trail of inspiration along the way, breaking down midlife stereotypical barriers, and proving it's never too late to find new passion and purpose. Think of it as your one-stop shop full of real stories you can relate to. Lifestyle inspiration, practical resources, from health and wealth, mindset to menopause, reinvention to rebellion. No subject is off limits. Living a life of liberty, free to be, whatever we want to be in midlife and beyond. Welcome back to a new week of Liberty Free to Be. I hope all is good in your world. I'm having a great start to May. Just come back from Venice. I've been joining the Flavours holiday team. So I'll be writing and sharing a lot more about that. But Mark and I were invited along with Flavours Holidays to join a cookery course in Venice. Something that I am not known for my kitchen skills, I'll be honest. Mark's the one that really loves cooking in our household. So it was great for me to switch off, do something completely different, learn some new skills and meet some different people. So I'll be sharing a lot more about that. But never been to Venice before, so that was an amazing experience. Got a lot going on this month. I am hosting the Harrogate Celebration of Fashion Day, so I'm going to be presenting the day in the centre of town for anyone that's local on the 18th of May. We're going to be having a full celebration of all the shops in Harrogate and all the amazing fashion that was out there with models on the catwalk, and it's going to be a great fun day. So I'm looking forward to doing that. I'm also York Fashion Week Ambassador. So I've just had my Generation fashion show and panel event, which was celebrating models over the age of 40. And as you can tell, I've got a lot to say on ageism of fashion in the industry. Is ageism the last ism in the fashion industry to be addressed? I think so. So that was great to have that. That was in the Apostle in York. So I've had a good start at the beginning of the month. What I'm finding is I am saying yes to more opportunities, and I am still pushing myself out of my comfort zone. That doesn't mean to say that doesn't come with new anxieties, new fears, that I am having to challenge myself and overcome. So if you are somebody that is not sure whether to say yes to something, you've been thinking about doing it, but you haven't started yet, just say yes, do it, figure it out. You will be okay. Yes, it can feel scary. Try and channel that into excitement, because you don't know where it might lead to. So lots of exciting things going on this month and lots of exciting shoots, which I can't share, but it's going to be a great month. And it's my birthday month too. So how could it not be a good month? We have got a really interesting guest today. I've been wanting to talk to Emma Sale for quite some time. We're going to have an important conversation. So Emma Sale is the founder of Killing Kittens. And if you don't know about it already, it's one of the UK's fastest growing and largest sex positive communities. She creates the most amazing, immersive, fantasy, hedonistic adult parties. And she has built a community online with hundreds of thousands of people that are like-minded, that want to explore their sexuality. It's a safe space. It's all about the women in the driving seat, and it's all about empowering women at the forefront of everything that they do. It's going to be a really interesting conversation. And what I really want to achieve with this conversation is to open up the conversation, because we should be talking more about sex at all ages. It is nothing to be embarrassed about or feared. There shouldn't be any stigma attached. And if this is not something for you, it doesn't mean to say that we can't appreciate and understand where there's a need for this, and to not judge other people because of it. So I really think that we need to have these open-minded conversations. So let's get stuck into it. Looking forward to talking to Emma. So good morning, Emma. Thank you so much for joining me. How are you today?
I'm all right. Thanks for having me on.
Good. We've got a lot to talk about. I'm really looking forward to today's conversation. For anybody that doesn't know anything about Killing Kittens and yourself, how do you kind of introduce it to people?
You know, it's one of those questions that when we're out and I get asked, my husband just like leans back and just swigs his drink, grinning, waiting for the explanation. I launched Killing Kittens in 2005. It's basically, I wanted to provide a safe space online and offline for women to very much be in control of their sexuality and to be able to explore in a safe environment without any sort of shame and judgment, and just sort of wanted to change the norm from what was going on in society and, you know, very patriarchal led world of dating. And that's sort of how it started, as sort of small events, masked events where sex does go on, but the women are very much in charge. We don't like single men. And so what started as that back in 2005 has sort of snowballed into a massive sort of online movement, world community, that spun off into different separate businesses as well, like Wax, our social dating app, that launched last year, and Safe Date, another app. So it's sort of everything we do, what started with empowering women sexually, is sort of now we've moved into sort of empowering everyone to just own their voice in a bedroom and be who, you know, who they want to be, and who they really are. So that's sort of at the core of everything.
Yeah. Amazing. And you're so right. We are, you know, from, I was thinking about it when I've been reading about you, from a young age, girls and women are taught to kind of, that actually is something to be ashamed of, that we've got to keep our sex to ourselves and to not have the freedom to explore, you know, not to sleep around and kind of see what we enjoy, because we get a bad reputation and we're judged, whereas men are, from a very young age, have complete freedom to go and explore and see what they're like and have the freedom to explore sex. And women just aren't, are we? We're called slags if we're young and we're exploring. And it doesn't matter what age you are, you know, even if you're divorced at 40 and you want to have the freedom to go and have lots of different relationships and lots of different sex experiences, it's still frowned upon in society, isn't it?
Yeah, no, massively. And we've had a big boom of the midlife woman, as you say, and the huge great increase in it. And it seems to be hitting the media quite a lot as well, as if it's this new thing that, you know, women in their like sort of late 30s, 40s, actually are going, no, fuck it. We've got the right, you know, we've got a right to own our voice in the bedroom. We've got the right to actually say what we want. And we've got, you know, the bi boom, you know, women, I've always said from day one, women are naturally bi curious, bisexual, just kind of, so actually there's been a big increase in sort of women coming out of straight marriages, because that's what they felt they had to do, going, actually, we like women as well. So we've seen a huge growth in the last, you know, increase in all of this in the last couple of years, and people coming out of divorces and, or kids getting older and them going, hang on a minute, we've literally just put ourselves on a shelf for a decade, and it's all been about the kids' needs, the husband's needs, and you just lose that. Well, who am I? I like, one of my favorite quotes is remember who you were before the world told you who you should be.
Absolutely.
And I think women, you know, you lose sight of that. And I, you know, have that conversation with loads of girls, just remember who were you? Who were, you know, as a kid, as a girl, what did you want to do? What were your dreams? What made you tick? It's sort of, you just forget it.
Yeah, absolutely. I got divorced at 39 after being with my husband, my first husband, from the age of 16. So you can imagine getting to 39, 40 years old and thinking, well, yeah, who am I? But when it came to my body confidence and sex, it was like starting over again. And I wish I had the confidence now that I have now, because I can see how something like getting kittens would have attracted me, because it's that freedom. What I like about what you're doing is the safe space that you've created for women to explore. How is it different to other sex platforms? Because it is all about the women being
in community. It's honestly, you know, the kind of the sex party sort of scandalous male headline has always been the kind of, oh, it's that. But actually, if you speak to any member, they'll go, well, it's the community. It's that belonging. It's, you know, people have made a lot of friends there. It's, you know, friendship. There's groups, you know, of women who meet on there, and they're going off on hiking weekends, and it's got absolutely nothing to do with the actual sex part. You know, the whole online side is huge, and massive great chat rooms, and they're all monitored by what we call community kittens. And all the community kittens are people who have been members, who are members, women who have just, you know, it's their world, and it's sort of, it's what's made them, and they feel so passionate about it that they're now in there, you know, monitoring the groups for us and guiding new members. And so that's the big part of it. It's that very trusted, safe space, and you know, the members know that there's, you know, it's verified members and it's real people, and the respect and the consent, and, you know, that's the openness within it, and no judgment, and the inclusiveness is sort of what makes it what it is.
And what makes it unique is that men can't go in on their own, can they? They've got to be with a partner. They're not allowed, single men aren't allowed to go to the events. They're not allowed to initiate the first move, which I found really interesting. Mm-hmm. Have you seen a rise in, because originally when you first asked this, am I right in thinking that this attracted the younger single women? Whereas now it's shifted to couples doing this together.
Do you know what? Actually, it was quite a few couples at the beginning. So it's probably more, I'm going to completely contradict what you just said. It's probably more, there's more single girls coming now and older ones as well. I say older, 30s, 40s.
Yeah.
And coming in groups than there sort of was at the beginning, because, sort of, you know, it's nearly 20 years ago. It was much more judgment, and actually girls in their 20s were kind of, we can't be seen to, you know, you get the 20-year-olds nowadays are a totally different breed, and they don't see any different really compared to the boys, and they're more financially independent, and, you know, so they're more kind of, well, we're going to go and actually, you know, they're more selfish in that, we'll do what we want, and what's in it for me. You know, we didn't have that mentality in our 20s.
No, not at all.
In any aspects of our life,
no.
Kind of things. Like, help me out.
Yeah.
So actually, it might be a slightly younger demographic, because I was 25 when I started it. So you kind of flock in the people around you. But, I mean, the average age now attending the parties is sort of mid-30s.
Right.
Average age of women is sort of early 30s, but I mean, we have 60-year-old couples that come, so, and we have early 20-year-olds that come, so it's a big old age rate. And we have more women coming on their own now, or coming in groups of women who just, you know, they just love dancing around. They like the atmosphere of the events. They don't get involved, don't get naked. Some might dance around in their lingerie because it's just empowering. And no one's going to jump them. It's weird because it's sort of, you know, it's more sleazy being in a nightclub or a bar than it is at one of these events.
Yeah. And that's the thing, that's what I really love about what you're doing, is you're really breaking down that stigma that's attached to it, because your events really are something quite special. So how do you kind of, how would you describe a typical event? Because it is all about the glam. It's always in really luxurious locations. It's the whole getting ready for the event in itself. So what's the kind of typical event look like?
They're mainly like black tie or cocktail dress, tie. Yeah, there's dress code. They're always masks, so everyone has to arrive in masks, and you can take them off after that, sort of the drinks reception. There's always a drinks reception, cocktail or fizz reception. Often we have an oyster shucker or caviar kind of shucker who walks around the drinks reception bit. We have performers, amazing performers, pop-up performers, kind of burlesque type, who will constantly be popping up throughout the evening and night, depending on what the venue is, depending if there are stages. Sometimes they're going up down the stairs, sometimes they're sort of walking through the crowd. So it depends what the venue is on that front, on the performance side of things. But they go on throughout the night, DJs. So actually, it's a really cool party where, you know, I have friends, I'd take friends down to some of the big ones, and we just party, you know, we just dance. And actually, sometimes I've left and there's been a party of 700 people and I haven't seen any sex going on at all, because you have to kind of wander upstairs or into the side rooms, the playrooms, as we call it, to see that. So it's sort of, yeah, it's not a case of it's properly in your face if you don't want that. People often will come and they don't really want to get involved in that bit, but they might dance a bit and then they wander around and have a little, you know, little gander, and then come back down again. And yeah, so that's sort of,
yeah, even that it's a safe space even just to be curious to start off that journey, isn't it? And other people decide whether that's for them or not. And you do these events across the world now. It's really taken off. It's a global thing. You do them in Venice, you do them in, is it Berlin? You know, have you seen different types of judgment in different countries?
No, it's weird. It kind of, New York's good. I mean, New York's quite like London, but New Yorkers love to complain about everything and anything. So you get different. And then, you know, Europeans actually, they're much, because it's kind of quite, it's very established. It's very, you know, the libertines kind of culture, and it's there and it's how it is. And, you know, so actually the Italians and the French are Where you have with that is it's going on behind closed doors and it happens, and they're more open to it as a society like that. They just don't shout about it. So you've still got quite religious, you know, the Catholic countries and quite a religious element going on. So no, it's sort of, you get different, you know. We did a couple in LA, and with LA, they all like to pretend this, you know, they're squeaky clean. Mm. That sort of, you know, LA, it kind of looks like it's dead at 11 o'clock at night, but actually, you know, the party's going on in people's houses. So it's sort of, there's different way you see different like nuances, but we have such an international crowd that actually, you know, we had a massive party in Venice, and actually I think there was only about 8 Italians. And the rest, we had people that flew in from Australia, from Washington, New York, Marbella, Croatia. You know, there was loads of different nationalities in the room. So it's very much a kind of the destination ones. We're launching Paris on the 18th of May. Again, it's sort of, there's a lot of other Europeans that are coming in for that, and they just make a weekend out of it. So,
yeah. And have you noticed, because when you first started, I think you were very, really brave when you first started, because starting up a new business in the first place at 25 is quite daunting. But also to step into what historically has still been, the sex industry was always male dominated business wise. How challenging was that when you started the business back in 2005?
Yeah, I mean, it was. I look back and actually, you know, being more aware and more self-aware now, and you're more kind of a little bit, you know, the anxiety when you had kids and, you know what I mean? You have all that in your, it kind of, I look back sometimes and go, fucking hell, I had a pair of testicles. back then, but you know, I was this obnoxious 25-year-old that just thought I was right about everything. So it kind of, yeah, so I think that you know, obnoxious side just, yeah, massively helped for a start, because I always say that, you know, people always say, and I look at you, it's such a male industry, and it was set, and I did get bullied a lot by a few people, that guys that were with setups that were already in the industry and threatened, and the more they did it, the more I was like, fuck you, watching me. So it sort of, it fueled it, and it still fuels it. So, you know, the reactions, if I get negative reactions or I get online abuse, which regularly happens, it kind of, that just makes me charge, you know, if it, you know, fires it up just to keep going and go, well, actually, we've still got a lot to do. Yeah. And a long way to go. So we'll keep going. And then, yeah, so we just now because the world has changed on the genders front, it's not as binary as it was when I launched, you know, man, woman, straight, gay, bi, that was it really. And now it's still sort of, you know, 1,000 shades of gender and sexuality. And that's why we've kind of opened it all up and launched Wax. And we're actually launching KK Hom, which is the gay and, yeah, bisexual male version. We've been kind of trialing it underground for about 6 months, and there's a massive demand to it, because again, the bi boom, so the bisexual nature in men is huge, and they have to, you know, there's a massive thing, you know, in society telling them they have to be a man, marry a woman. So it's sort of, so actually it's kind of, you know, let's just be honest, women have it and still have it a lot harder than men, but when it comes to sexuality and not conforming to the straight, you know, man, woman, marry, that is, you know, it's sort of this societal expectation, which religion has a lot to answer for. There's a lot of, it leaves out a lot of people feeling a bit left out and a bit uninspired and shame and guilt and everything. So we're sort of opening it up for everyone.
Yeah, and when I was thinking about it, when you first launched it, it was probably around the time that Adam Summers had first started up.
On the high street.
Sex in the City was talking more openly and showing women having active sex lives for the first time on TV, on kind of media TV. And at the time, that must have felt like things were really changing. But when I look back, and there's still this stigma attached to it, we're still not having these conversations enough openly about sex. I know my friends would not be comfortable talking about sex in my age group. And I can't understand.
I love making people feel really awkward.
And I can't understand why. We just need to have these conversations. So even though back then, 20 years ago, we had these great influx of stuff like the Amsterdam starting and you starting your business, we've still got such a long way to go. How can we try and encourage women to be more open about it? Because
I think it's that kind of ripple effect, that what I find is, you know, I have no filter, and often the indoor inside voice is permanently out. Sometimes I'll come out with something and friends will go, is that actually just come out of your mouth? And the older I get, the worse it's becoming. I think I'm turning into my mum. It's just when you, when I start talking, you can go, there's an initial kind of awkwardness, or but then actually, and you know, they might have a glass of wine, and then suddenly they'll open up, and then it becomes normal. And I think that's it. It's just normalizing the conversations, and people, I find floodgates open whenever I'm out because of what I do. It's like I suddenly become their people's therapist, women's therapist. It just sort of, it's, oh, well, I've never told anyone this. And it's as if it's sort of, it's, I've become their safe space, and we can't, you know, we can't talk to our friends about it. And you're like, well, actually, you probably could. It, you know, it's sort of, everyone wants to talk about it, but it's just breaking that dam to start with.
Yeah.
And then the floodgates open. You know, I find it with school moms, it's sort of, it you get it all. It's,
yeah,
everyone kind of thinking how they should behave, and then suddenly it all becomes very open.
I was going to ask you about that, because you're a mum, you're at the school gates, you know, playground talk, people judge, and I think sometimes women are the worst people to judge other women, unfortunately.
Oh, big time.
Did you really struggle with that at the beginning? Did you find that there was a lot of positivity?
Do you know what, Emma, it's a little Church of England primary school, so that was all three of mine are at. Do you know what, it kind of, I just ignore it. I'm not really aware of it. I've kind of found my people, and so I'm always aware of the odd look, or, you know, I can see a few people chatting, and, you know, there was a massive Daily Mail article out yesterday. And it actually mentioned, I'm actually chair of the PTA. I don't know how I
love that.
I was drunk in lockdown. I got wrapped into it. And it actually mentioned it in the headline about the PTA thing. And I thought, oh, crap, this is where the worlds collide. It didn't mention the school. And yeah, and I knew a couple of teachers said, saw the mail this morning as they walked past me. And I thought, shit, you know, if one of them seen the mail, the whole staff room seen the mail. And it kind of, so, but do you know what? No one says anything to my face. And if they want to have an issue with it, then excuse me, that's their problem, you know. So,
and I guess it's the same online, isn't it? Because the online space and trolling, you know, I've experienced being in Daily Mail articles, and the comments, I don't read them because they're usually unpleasant.
No. People yesterday, but have you read the comments? I'm like, I stopped reading the comments 18 years ago. Yeah. I do not read comments because that's the point.
Me too, yeah. And it usually comes from their own insecurities though as well, doesn't it? And fear of the unknown in your case.
Yeah, so I say, so I've kind of in a twisted way, someone asked me yesterday about taking abuse, and I said in kind of twisted way, I kind of take it as a compliment, because I'm like, oh, I feel sorry for whoever's saying it, because I'm thinking this is a projection. This is from their shame, their guilt, their insecurities. This isn't actually who they really are. So it's sort of, yeah, if I always think if you start feeling sorry for someone, you kind of can't be angry with someone.
Yeah, absolutely. Has it surprised you how quickly it has grown? Because, I mean, you know, when you launch Wax, you have something like 200,000 people sign up really quickly. Has it really surprised you how many people are out there that need this community?
No, you know, it doesn't surprise me, because it's sort of every other person I meet is intrigued and would like to come and see, and it's sort of, so actually you've got a very, very loud, you know, silent, no, very loud minority, you know, out there judging. But actually the silent majority is actually sort of are open-minded. They are wanting to, you know, are intrigued, or would actually secretly like to sort of, explore and find their voice in the bedroom and stuff, especially women.
Yeah.
I think a lot of women they feel like they've made the bed and they're lying in it and they're settling and that's it. And now it's just how it is. Mm. You know, one woman the other day, she was in her 60s and saying, you know, we're having a conversation. Well, that's just how it is. It's how men are. And I'm like, no, you know, that whole, it just how it is. Has anything ever changed in the world by just accepting that it is how it is? You know, that's in everything, technology, innovation, everything. It's sort of, if we all sat there going, well, it's just how it is, then nothing would have changed ever.
Yeah.
So, no.
And I think, you know, that age thing, there has been the freedom for the younger generations to talk about sex, so that it has become increasingly more difficult for 40-year-olds and 50-year-olds and 60-year-olds to talk about their sex lives, because historically we've been written off as if that's it, we don't need sex after 40, and you hit the menopause and that's it, it's downhill, we don't need sex ever again. And I'm not buying that, because I talk to so many older women that have had a really healthier more active sex life in their 60s than they ever did in their 30s and 40s.
Big time. I mean, more the highest incidence of STIs are people in their 70s.
Yeah.
Because they just don't give a shit. Yeah, and whenever I speak to anyone in their 70s, and grannies love me at weddings, we always have big chats, and hi, the great aunts and things, it always has been. And they've all said the common thing is they wish they'd had more sex. Wish they'd not cared so much about what people thought, and wish they, yeah. And it's sort of that's the general thing that they, and they're all like, good for you. We wish we had it in, had. And that's the thing. And, you know, we have the in women in the 40s, 50s, 60s, we're also, you know, I'm the Generation X kind of, we're the last lot to really have that messaging as a kid of be different to boys and know your place and be the good girl and, you know, lie back and think of England and keep your legs shut and, you know what I mean? And actually having sexual stuff. I mean, I remember being at university and in my head, I could do everything, but there was a lot of blowjobs given because I wasn't actually having sex. And because as long as I didn't have sex, I wasn't a slut. And it's just, think back at that. And we were all like that. All my girlfriends were like that.
Yeah.
And it's just the most ridiculous mental headspace when you think of it. Yeah. And it's in our bones, that messaging, you know, from the 40s upwards as women, it's in our bones and our DNA that. And so it is very, very hard to get that out, to actually go, you know, I'm going to be selfish in the bedroom and not worry about, you know, even I sometimes I'm like, oh shit, it's taking ages for me to come. Is he bored? Is his finger wearing out? Is he, you know, it's and actually when you have that kind of, oh shit, it's, yeah. And I have to like bitch slap myself and go, fuck it. He can go for an hour. If it's going to take an hour, it's going to take an hour.
Yeah.
No, but yeah. That's just, it's in our all, you know, it's about them coming, it's about their needs, and it's just, you know, how you've been taught.
And even down to the fact that, you know, no one talks about, so from our generation, no one talks about self-pleasure, women didn't talk about masturbation, they didn't concentrate on themselves. And I'm guessing for single women to come to events like yours and to join part of the community, even if they don't want to venture with another partner immediately, it gives them a chance to explore their own bodies. Through going to your events and to voyeurism and seeing what other people are doing, just to give them confidence that it's normal and that it's nothing to be scared of, or that there isn't a stigma attached to it.
Yeah, exactly. It's you know, it starts with conversations. It starts with communication. It starts with that, just opening the door to having a conversation. And then, just like I said, then it's sort of, I often go, well, why do you feel guilty? Why? And no one can put their finger on it. You know, it's sort of, it's just that automatic, no, it's wrong. It's like, well, why is it wrong? Why is it dirty? Why is it sleazy? Why, you know, and actually just.
I think one of the things that I've noticed whenever you've watched these TV programs where they show that when they focus on swinging, for instance, which is very different to your setup, but it's, man, this is my own kind of perceived judgment of when couples go, one couple will want it more than the other. And if there's an imbalance, then that's detrimental to a relationship. Literally.
And there's often, I mean, the TV shows always try and, you know, portray it as a bunch of real weirdos and, you know, unhappy relationships. And actually, you know, from what I've seen, and a lot of these couples are the most secure, you know, couples I've ever met in my life, not unhappy. And often you get in those, again, it's that kind of, if it's male led, often it's the man going, we're going to do this.
Yeah.
Or I'll leave you, or I'll cheat. And the women feel like they haven't got an option.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, again, it's that, it's a, you know, very male led setup a lot of the time.
Yeah.
And the swapping and the, and you just go, no, that it shouldn't be like that. It's choice, really. It comes down to choice and respect and not sort of being forced to
have your own boundaries,
shagging someone else. Yeah. So that the hubby can have sex with someone else. It kind of, there's quite a dark side to a lot of it.
Yeah. And how do you, I'm a mum of three as well. And, you know, when they're older, what kind of message do you really want them to come away with, knowing what you do with work?
Well, I've got
a lot of positives.
Yeah. But I've got, I mean, mine are 9, 7, and 5, and the 7 and 5 are 2 girls, and they are the feistiest, most confident sort of, and I, you know, I always say they, you know, I just want them to know that they can do what they want to do, and you know, choice, and that's across everything. They're real sports nuts as well. I'm very good at sport, and it's sort of already they kind of, well, we can be a footballer, we can be a cricketer, we can, you know, actually we never had that. So it's sort of in the same way, sex, you know, when we talk, when they talk about getting married and stuff already, they're like, well, if you want to marry a girl, you can, we can marry girls. We can, you know, it's sort of, it's that having, and you, well, my, you know, my 5-year-old's use of the word vagina is very strong. she said it all the time. But again, I don't want to stop her because she's kind of, I've taught them it's a body part.
Yeah.
And actually do, and that's the thing, but it's sort of, it's there up to them who go, who that is yours, you know, and it's your private body part that it's up to you who sees it, goes near it. And so it's that, it's sort of teaching, and, you know, boys, to be honest, there's more messaging lessons, you know, that I'm more aware of the boy, of my son, and him being, you know, totally on board the kind of actually, it's not just his pleasure and his choices as a man, as a boy, it actually, girls are his equal.
Yeah.
And he needs to look after the girls around him, and that. So it's sort of, yeah, it's a kind of, it's a really tricky one. It's a tricky, and you probably know, you know, when, because sometimes we come out with stuff, it's an automatic reaction of, and again, that's how we've been programmed,
yeah,
to not treat them differently, to actually come out and go, no, why am I letting son get away with, you know,
yes,
babe, and expecting the girls not to behave like that. So actually my girls are fully feral, yeah, and wild, and they, you know, middle one's a real little tomboy. And it's sort of, yeah, I'm not going to, that push to be a girl. It's, yeah, you have to be, I think you just have to stand back as parents and let them find their thing and encourage them. Just to do and introduce them to different things early doors,
yeah.
So they're actually like, no, I don't like that, I like that, and already they're all kind of, they've all got their little different things that they, yeah, love doing.
Do you think there should be more done in schools to talk, to open these conversations up, so particularly secondary schools?
Yeah, massively. I think the sex ed is so prehistoric. And I've, you know, already starting to see things being sent back, and it, again, hearing from friends who have secondary school, because it's still sort of, you know, penis in a vagina, man coming. That's still, mm-hmm, it's still, and not enough is done on porn. And, you know, the dangers of porn and what is going on in teens is terrifying, to be honest, because it's just a circle coming around again. It's sort of girls thinking that that's how they're expected to behave in the bedroom, boys thinking that, you know, is how they can behave in the bedroom. Yeah. There's nothing about female pleasure in it. It's so, and actually it's not going anywhere. So I just think where they should be,
yeah,
more on it, on porn education to go. That's like watching a James Bond film. It's not real, it,
yes,
you know, and actually, and female pleasure should be a massive part in the mix. But, you know, to be honest, the bigger picture in that is, you know, is smart access to smartphones. I mean, I'm like, it's a hill I'll die on. I am very against giving kids smartphones. My lot know they're not having one till they're 13 minimum.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping by then the law is that it's banned by under 16. So
yeah,
it's, I just think the minute you have access to the internet, everything goes tits up on the, yeah, from there. And that's from porn to,
yeah,
eating issues, kind of a lot of the gender and sexuality side of things is really messing with kids' heads. So yeah, it's kind of, you know, a much bigger picture.
And how regulated is the industry? Because obviously, I'm guessing, in terms of the whole kind of the bigger picture, your business is under the same umbrella as porn, even though, yeah, it's completely different, which is crazy, but it'll be different. But I'm guessing it's the same regulations. How regulated,
yeah,
is it?
Well, that's the thing. It's sort of expanded. The adult industry has expanded at pace because of the digital world and tech. But what hasn't expanded is their regulation and actually having different categories.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're all considered adults. So we can't do any kind of digital marketing or advertising. Or, I mean, we can with Wax now, the social dating app, because that isn't, and that's part, you know, which is great to see that being able to happen. But yeah, it's all in the same pot. But to be honest, it's like, you know, Killing Kittens is quite full on and it sucks. And, you know, I don't really want a 13-year-old You know, I don't think a 13-year-old girl should really have it in their face on Instagram or something and have that just pop up. And so, you know, there is that. It's adult content. So we've actually adapted a lot of ours to actually not, you know, there isn't really, it's what we call adult safe for work. So rather than, you know, the not safe for work stuff, which is the porn, you've then got an area that is adult safe for work, which actually a lot of brands, you know, from lingerie to sex toys to what we do would fall into adult safe for work. The brands that fall into that, we're all pretty regulated. We're all pretty, you know, there's sort of a lot of, again, as I said, just sort of responsibility around the porn industry. I mean, that's just a free for all, to be honest. OnlyFans, free for all. I think a lot needs to be done.
Yeah.
On that front, but I guess regulating social media as a whole.
Well, it does. Yeah. And is that what kind of led you to start up WeRX, the wax platform? Because it's an adult community, isn't it? It's an online platform.
It's your ecosystem, basically, for your adult life. It's everything from sex education, chat groups, you know, webinars, workshops, masterclasses, big event listings, and whole dating side. The dating pack is as good as any other big dating app out there. So it's sort of, there's no reason to leave it. You can find, you know, even if you get in a relationship, even if you're in a relationship for 20 years, there's something for you. So it's just sort of, as I said, it's your whole adult life under one roof. And it's safe, and everyone's sort of verified members. So it's not like in normal dating apps where half the members are fake and bots. And so that's one thing that, we kind of pride ourselves on, that it would have been easy to open up and double the amount of members, just, you know, get commercials and just to get numbers and stuff in, but we've, you know, stood our ground and gone, no, it's got to be verified.
So I'm guessing that for women that are listening, if they're intrigued or they're curious about the whole killing kittens and everything that you do, joining Wax would be a great place to start.
But it's the home of the KK community.
Okay. Well, we'll send all, put all the links at the end of the conversation, and I'll share that with everybody. But I think that the thing that I would really like women to take away from this is that it's nothing to be ashamed of, to be curious and to want to explore if that's something that's in the back of their mind, and to just lift that shame and the stigma attached to it. Because I'm sure you get this all the time where people say, I'm going to go to one of your events, but nobody knows I'm here. None of my friends know. And that it's almost, it's kept as the dark side of their life. And actually it should be so much more open, shouldn't it?
Yeah, and I'm seeing it more and more, actually, people are being more open, you know what I mean, and telling their mates, oh yeah, we're off to KK, kind of actually, it's sort of a bit cool. that's what we want, yeah.
How would you like to see it in kind of in another 20 years' time? How do you want to see it grow?
Well, I want the online side to be absolutely massive, but I really would have sold it in 20 years. Event side, we're just, you know, growing the events, the, you know, 700 to 1,000 people now sometimes.
They all sell out. They all sell out really quickly.
Just that's the thing. It's to grow the community, and that is the whole online world of it. And at the same time, just put on more and more amazing events around the world so that other people have access to it. I've always said, even when doing this, that to me, the future's human. Even when everyone's out there, you know, future's female, I'm like, it's not, future's human. And already I'm starting to see it turn a bit in that, you know, we went through a crazy phase of labels for everything. And it's kind of actually this year, I've kind of seen it softening a bit because it's just getting ridiculous. You know, the kind of the strap line, LGBTIQ, you know, it's sort of, it's now about 10, it's sort of, can we really add, you can't really add anymore. To it. You can't, everything's getting to a point where it's like, you can't have 40 words describing who can come in. Okay. I mean, it's just sort of, right, can we just say, it's humans. Can we just all be humans? I'd like to think that in 20 years time, that's just it. It's an acceptance of everyone just being whoever they want to be.
Without
the need of labels.
Amazing. And you know, what I love about you is you are all about empowering people in everything that you do. So you don't just do this. You've got your sisterhood, which I know that you're really proud of. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
So sisterhood is a sport. It's a set up why I started at the same time as KK Action. It was actually because I wanted more girls to do these crazy adventures that I wanted to do, sports races. And you kind of leave university and came to London. It's like, well, where's all my sports people, girls? It kind of boys are much better at kind of staying together. And so we just, yeah, we do loads of different races all over the world for different women and children's charities. Yeah, so we, yeah, it's good. That's it. It's not business. It's sort of, it's a bit of a, it's my, it's the yin to my yang, but we're kind of spinning. We've just launched a setup called Women the Fuck Up, which actually is, it's all about basically empowering women from the bedroom to the boardroom to basically be unapologetically selfish and to be the best version of you and success on your terms. And so, yeah, we're launching that, which is sort of courses and workshops, and with it's kind of paying it forward. And yeah, different women and experts in the mix to do different things. So lots of collaborations with different setups. But
amazing. Yeah. Knowledge is power, isn't it? That's fantastic. Mm-hmm. And I love the names that you have for all your brands. What is the name? What is the Kitty and Kittens, just in case anyone doesn't know?
I know. That's crazy. That was like 3 days in Ibiza having not slept. There's slang for every time you masturbate, God kills a kitten. Right. So if you're killing a kitten, you're having a wank. And it's well dark.
Well, it fits perfectly. Thank you so much. I think what you're doing is really empowering people. And I do think, you know, there'll be some people listening that this is not for them, but I hope that they learn to not judge others because of their choices. Yeah. That's really important, because we've just got to let people get on with their lives and explore life to the full. We're only here once. And at the end of the day, what some people want in sex is completely different to the next person.
Exactly. You have one life, so why wouldn't you want to be happy?
Yeah, absolutely. My last two questions are that I ask all my guests. So if you were to pay yourself a compliment, what would it be?
Probably the energy, the inclusive energy. This is what I get told a lot.
Amazing. And my last question, what does liberty, free to be mean to you?
To me, it means just being the best version of yourself. So yeah, owning your choices and making decisions that, yeah, just sort of bring out the best in you for you.
And it's not selfish, put yourself first.
No, I call it being unapologetically selfish. So, yeah.
Brilliant. Thank you so much. How can people find out about you? Website, social media?
To be honest, if you Google Killing Kittens, it's up there.
There's
not much competition on the name.
Thank you so much for your time, Emma. Good luck with everything. Keep doing what you're doing. I'll be following your journey. Thank you.
Thank you.
So I really found Emma's conversation really interesting, and it does make you think, and it reminds us all that we need to be more open-minded. People should have the freedom to explore their sexuality and what makes them feel sensual, and to connect with their bodies however they choose in the safe space that they're doing it in. And that's exactly what Emma has created, a safe space for women. It's women-led, women-driven, women initiated it, and men can't initiate the first move. So she's making some really bold steps in this industry. Whether it's for you or not, I hope that it has reminded us all not to judge other people, and that we should have these conversations, because let's face it, she's right. From a very young age, women are made to feel that sex is something that we're almost should be made to feel ashamed of, that we don't talk about it, that it's all kept behind closed doors. We're all having sex, we've all had sex at some point in our lives. If it's not for you right now, go through the menopause, completely get it, but it doesn't mean to say it won't come back. We only have to hear conversations like Mary Jane Fahey last episode, talking with the Glorious Boards, Life After 60, Sex After 60 in the Cosmopolitan article. There is hope. If you are struggling right now, it doesn't mean to say it's over, and it's about finding what works for you. And if that means joining something like the Killing Kittens platform, then so be it. There is nothing to be embarrassed or ashamed of, because there are so many like-minded people out there. Personally, for me, it's not for me, and it's not something that I would choose to explore. If you'd have asked me that 12 years ago, when I got divorced in my 40s and I was being kind of let out into the world again, perhaps I would have done. Who knows? I'm going to keep an open mind on that one. But I just hope that we can have these conversations and really remind us all that we shouldn't be judging other people, and that it's so important that women have the freedom to choose and to explore their sexuality, their sensuality, and keep that connection with their bodies and be in control. So really enjoyed that conversation. Lots of food for thought. I'll be back in 2 weeks' time, and I'm going to be talking to Nikki Woods, who's just written A Men's Guide to the Menopause.
Thank you for listening to the Liberty Free to Be podcast. I hope it's left you feeling inspired. If it has, why not join the free Liberty Lifestyle Hub over on Facebook? With over 300 women all at different stages of midlife, making new connections and supporting one another. Don't forget to come and say hello at Liberty Free to Be on Instagram. I'd love to know what free to be means to you. If you're loving the podcast, don't forget to subscribe, rate, and leave a review. Your support is much appreciated. I'll be back in a fortnight, but in the meantime, keep being fabulous.